Hello and welcome to the DS Smith Quarter Three Trading Update. My name is Caroline, and I'll be your coordinator for today's event. Please note this call is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen-only mode. However, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions at the end of the call. This can be done by pressing star one on your telephone keypad to register your questions. If you require assistance at any point, please press star zero, and you'll be connected to an operator. I will now hand over the call to your host, Mr. Miles Roberts, Chief Executive Officer, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Firstly, thank you for joining us today. I'm Miles Roberts, the Group's Chief Executive, and I'm joined by Adrian Marsh, our CFO. Our statement today covers trading for the period since the 1st of November 2022. Firstly, I'd like to start by saying that despite the volatile macroeconomic environment, performance remains in line. I'm really very pleased with the financial performance of the business, with continued very strong profit growth and good cash generation. We did see some destocking in December and January from our customers that resulted in a weaker Q3 in terms of volume than we saw in H1. We have continued to take market share, really driven by our strategic focus on resilient sectors such as food and drink. Our largest customers in particular continue to see the security of supply, our service and our rate of innovation as absolutely critical, and our relationships are stronger and deeper as a result. And this has meant that whilst volumes have been lower, this has been more than offset by resilient pricing, our robust and flexible supply chain, and ongoing cost management initiatives, driving further margin progression, strong profit growth, and an improvement on the return on capital. We continue to stay very close to our customers, really in touch with their evolving needs, which I'm confident position us well for the remainder of this year, but also into the next financial year. So thank you. And I'd now like to invite questions, which Adrian and myself will answer between us. Thank you very much.
If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star one on your telephone keypad. We will take the first question from line Urs from Credit Suisse. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Thank you and good morning. I just wanted to start a bit on volumes. Of course, your prior guidance suggested a bit of a less negative year-on-year comp for H2 versus H1. Q3 clearly was a weaker quarter than expected in volume terms, and that destocking element, of course, is a factor. But if you can share any color now, what you're seeing, how we should think about H2 volumes versus H1 and last year, and also if you have any color to give on when you see an end to this destocking event, which is clearly weighing quite heavily on volume. The second question is relating to price over cost. Of course, some of the cost elements are now coming down. OCC is clearly lower, energy costs and freight costs, etc. Wage costs are moving up. But when should we see some degree of top-line price erosion, i.e., the price-cost spread starting to narrow again after sort of an expansion we've seen over the last maybe six, 12 months? Those were my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. We've seen volumes over the last couple of years being really very, very strong overall. And there's no doubt that with the challenges to some supply chains, our customers have built some additional stock over the last couple of years just to ensure that their supply, mainly into the retailers, has remained very, very strong with high levels of service. Inevitably, that sort of excess stock will come out and really pretty much across the board over Christmas and New Year. We saw our customers, instead of perhaps closing for 5 days or 6 days, they would close for sort of 7 days or 8 days, and so you've got an extra couple of days in there of closure. And of course, 2 days in a month is actually 10% of production time, so we have seen that. Really over at the end of December and into January. And some of the numbers there in the closure are unusual. We haven't really seen that in the past, but of course they are responding to what's been quite an unusual time. So our personal view is that the numbers that we've seen recently in volume will improve. That remains very much our view. Exactly when and how is obviously uncertain, but they will certainly improve. It's that's where we are, and indeed that's very much what our customers are telling us. In terms of price and cost, when our Q3 average selling price was actually higher than our Q2 average selling price. They've actually continued to see pricing moving up. And I think there are a number of things in there. Whilst the some of the input costs of things like OCC and energy have come down, that's all fed into the price of paper. Of course, on our index deals, we have not only indices for paper, it's also for other costs as well. And of course, those other costs have continued to go up. So they've actually seen the pricing there improve. So therefore, it really depends what happens to the price of paper going forward. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the falls in paper, you know, they are obviously offsetting the going against the increase in the indices for other costs. Exactly how it develops, I mean, none of us know. But I have to say, I am very pleased with the pricing, and I think that does go to the heart of sort of the issue of what is our relationship with our customers in terms of what we've delivered for them over the last few years in terms of service and the quality and the security, etc., but also what they're looking at going forward with all the challenges that we face, whether it's on governance, whether it's on innovation, whether it's on sustainability, whatever it is. I think we're in a good place, and we have to continue to earn their trust and respect every day, and that's exactly what we're doing. Thank you.
Just a quick follow-up, if I could. Just you commented specifically about the couple of days extra December, January. Can you give any color at all what you've seen in February and real estate from March? Any change to that destocking?
Yeah, I don't have... I mean, you've got to be careful on the, just looking at any one particular month because days and, you know, as they fall in weekends, we're still actually looking at the February data, but there's no doubt that at the start of February, it really started to come through quite quickly. It was quite an improvement, but I would really caution against, you know, looking at, you know, particular months or particular weeks, etc. I mean, I think it is a bit bumpy. But what is for sure is that it will improve. I mean, you know, we are in food and drink, and looking at the end consumption of consumers, that is much better than the demand from our customers. That shows the destocking. And that shows, it gives us the confidence that it will improve in the future. Consumers haven't reduced their consumption so much. But it's a little bit bumpy, and exactly when and how is difficult to call. I think I'm going to not give quite so much, we can't give guidance on a monthly basis.
Thank you. We will take the next question from line David O'Brien from Goodbody. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for all of that colour to Lars' question. Could I just add to that, Q3, could you just quantify what the like-for-like volume performance was for us, just rather than trying to have us all guess it. And secondly, can you give a sense if there's any regional variations across that piece and how the US is performing as well versus Europe? And then finally, you know, you're seeing paper prices come down, OCC prices come down, energies come off. Just wondering how working capital should perform in the second half of the year and what we should be thinking about for net debt as we head into year end. We've only, whatever it is, 8 weeks to go.
Absolutely. Look, if I take the first two and then Adrian, we'll talk about the working capital. When we look at our, we don't sort of come in and looking at one quarter or the next. But I think, you know, looking what other people have been sort of talking about, I don't think we're particularly out of line with, you know, sort of the general commentary. But it is over, you know, a stretch again, just over quite a, you know, a short period and a few days of extra closure obviously has quite a sort of an effect in terms of percentage. But the end consumption by the consumer is much better than what we saw in over Christmas and the New Year. And when we look regionally, it's really been a right across the estate, because those where are, you know, have a lot of customers that go right across the business. So again, it shows that there's sort of like some central decision making. Now, markets that have been particularly poor for a while, you know, remain places like the UK for well known reasons, and also places like Germany, again, for well known reasons. But it has been pretty much across the board. And again, this just all goes to central decision, taking that out. And obviously, we expect to see an improvement in the future. But Adrian, would you like to take about working capital?
Yeah, thanks, Miles. I mean, fairly obviously, it's going to be a little bit of an outflow in the second half now. I mean, we're in the fortunate position where our prices are holding, therefore our receivables balances are remaining pretty constant, but obviously, you know, our payables are getting lower. So yeah, I fully expect an outflow in the second half. I think, you know, from a net debt perspective, you know, we're in a very, very good place. You know, compared to previous years, you know, our leverage will be well within our targets. So, you know, I'm not concerned on that front, but obviously, you know, it goes without saying that there will be a working capital squeeze at the moment because of the dynamics that we've highlighted, with sales prices remaining strong and cost bases coming off.
Thank you. We will take the next question from line Cole Houghton from Jefferies. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Well, thanks for taking my question. I'd just like to follow up on kind of the theme of industry supply chains. I mean, we're obviously calling out destocking by your customers in products, and I imagine everyone's adapting their supply chains for, you know, what should be the appropriate level of inventories to hold going forward. But can you give some color on how DS Smith's managing its inventories and kind of how you're helping the customers with their supply chain, and effectively how you're optimizing your kind of box plants and paper production? You know, are you, with your short paper position, does it enable you to kind of reduce your purchases from the market, kind of keep your mills running a bit fuller? You know, are you taking any kind of some commercial downtime to kind of match your supply to demand? Any color on that would be helpful.
Look, I say about staying close to our customers, and I think that's, you know, we're pleased with how we perform there. And obviously, our customers are coming to us. We tend to produce for to demand. We don't run a stock model ourselves. So as customers demand us, then we produce less. So we're not going to have sort of, you know, we don't start building up unnecessary stocks and things like that. So that does mean we have to be flexible. When we look at our, as you know, we produce less paper.
than that's used in packaging. So as the packaging demand comes down, we just buy less paper. I mean, it's one of the reasons, you know, we really like this model. We're really able to adapt to our customers' needs by flexing our supply chain. I think it gives us a very resilient position. And of course, we have been doing that. But we've also have taken some downtime in our paper mills. It's you know, inevitably there's been some work, some downtime there. And again, what we tend to do, because we've got this flexibility with our supply chain, we tend to take some extended shuts when we are closing for things like Christmas, or indeed for maintenance shuts. We'll extend them and just sort of bring forward some other maintenance and other work. And on the box plants, there again, it's back to the agreements that we have with, on a country by country basis. But often, you know, we have things like annualized hours. So if we're not working so much, then we bank the hours of our staff that we can call back at a later point. Or indeed, in some cases, it's about taking off holiday. We do obviously have temporary staff as well, and we can start to flex there. So we have seen, a good response in our production costs. And we try to call that out in this statement when we refer to, you know, our strength of our supply chain, just how it's been, how it's just adapted to this different environment. As I said earlier, I think it really is over Christmas and New Year, and we fully expect volumes to recover as we go into 2023.
Thank you. We will take the next question from line Dieter Winkelmann from JP Morgan. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone. Maybe just quickly on the volumes again. Obviously, when you gave your update early December, destocking hadn't really occurred yet, so it would have been hard to take that into expectations. I just want to find out, if we were to exclude the destocking effect, would you say that the volumes have performed in line with your expectations?
Yes, I would.
Thank you. We will take the next question from line Kevin Fogarty from Numis. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Morning, everyone, and thanks for the call. Just to come back on volumes again, just in terms of the dynamics, I guess, you're seeing, just by sector, is there sort of destocking largely kind of industrial, or are you seeing that in the FMCG space? I know you've mentioned kind of retail, perhaps, as an example. But just any sort of granularity on where that's being felt. And you point to sort of market share gain during the period. I just wondered if you could sort of say a little bit about that in terms of where you've been successful and perhaps why. And secondly, just in terms of your margin guidance previously, obviously at the half-year stage, you pointed to the coming in the 10 to 12%. Kind of range by the end of the fiscal year. Just given the dynamics you've seen during Q3, I just wondered if you're kind of any more positive or negative on where you might land within that range. What does the recent 3 months or so tell you?
Absolutely, thank you. If I take the first, then Adrian, could you ask coming on the margin guidance and perhaps also on the return on capital. But in terms of the sectors, yeah, when we've looked over the last quarter, see, leading into it from the first half, where we saw most volatility or most reduction was in things like the industrial sector. Yeah, there's no doubt, you know, countries like Germany, you know, they've lost a significant export market for them in terms of industrial production, which has been into Russia. But also, with the closure, the difficulties in China, again,
that those export markets have been more challenging, and therefore we did see particular weakness there. Our big sectors where we really focus, you know, in food and drink, particularly primary food, that's where we've seen some of the destocking. It's not in sort of the holding of our packaging. It is in the finished goods of our customers. And as I say, when we look at the retailers' results are much better than the destocking. And I said it's not surprising, as you know, a number of our customers just adapted to, I think, just bring down their holding of stock because they probably see that the supply chain is perhaps a little bit more robust than they were during the COVID period. Now, because of our focus in sectors that have, you know, been particularly resilient over many, many years, that has given us a natural market share gain. But in addition to that, when we look at the proportion of the business that we have with our customers, we've seen that grow, you know, over many years, but particularly over the last two years. And that has been supported with some really quite, you know, really very encouraging contractual wins with a number of customers. And we come back to why, you know, what are they after? What are they asking us for? And the challenge and their desire on this security, so they can take out their stock, plays to the strength of our business model in terms of the number of factories and the spread and our supply chain. How are we going to meet their future requirements in terms of new product development? The whole environmental debate, you know, the 1.5 degree science-based target. I mean, it's getting a lot of attention, and we're making a lot of good progress. So that's why I think, you know, our share has improved again, and we can see it quite clearly. But Adrian, do you want to talk about the margin guidance and perhaps returns?
Yeah. Thanks, Miles. In terms of margin, I mean, we said we're on an improving trend. You know, that's continued. We've obviously, as Miles was describing earlier, with utilising some of our own capacity and being flexible on what we buy and what we don't buy in the market, you know, we've had a bit of a reduction in the grossing up effect, which I've described at length in the past. So we're on a very strong margin progression at the moment, you know, and comfortably in our range, and it's on a positive trajectory. Return on capital is as you know from when we've talked about it before, the measure and the metric that we really look at strongly, and that's extremely positive. There's nothing really that I can say. We've had a very, very good performance in line with what you saw in the first half and what we've described before. So I'm very, very comfortable about our financial metrics. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the next question from line Andrew Jones from UBS. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Hi, James. Just a few questions just on pricing and also just back to the old energy cost issue. How are you seeing the lag now between sort of Testliner prices and how it translates into boxes? And, you know, if we assume, you know, now we've got Testliner prices, you know, as we see them today, with that lag, what would you expect that to do to box price on average by the end of your financial year and maybe by the end of, you know, the first quarter of the next financial year, however, you know, much foresight you have there? And just secondly, on the energy costs question, you've obviously locked up, you know, your pricing for this year, so you know that. But, you know, where are we on next year's pricing? I think you were 80% hedged last time you spoke. Given the pricing that was done at, you know, what sort of cost inflation are you expecting on the energy side if gas prices stay at this sort of level? Thank you.
No, thank you. If I take the pricing, and Adrian, if you'll happy talking about the energy. In terms of the pricing, what I can say is that, you know, our Q3 pricing, average box price, was better than Q2, and I think that we surprised that took that was a surprise to people. But it is that is a consequence, I think, of our increasing value add and also these other indices that we put in there. In terms of the specific indices for paper, I mean, it's that will come through, you know, in the normal course. There's a little bit in January, and the next indexation, they tend to run it in sort of three, four months. You know, ultimately that price of paper, as we pay less for the paper we're buying, that is passed back on the index deals to our customers. The other half of our contracts are indexed. The other half are non-indexed. And as we say, our overall pricing has remained very strong. But Adrian, energy?
Yeah. So we've talked obviously a lot about energy in the past. You know, our risk management is exactly that. You know, we're trying to smooth between years. One of our most significant costs, and you know, I expect a sort of a smooth transition between this year and next year. We've been in a fortunate position. We have sort of long-term hedging in place. It's about our risk management, and you know, I don't foresee any significant changes, particularly year on year. I mean, where the market is at now, you know, is at a level, you know, we're very comfortable with within our risk management, and if it spikes again, you know, we're well protected. So I think it's I've been very, very pleased with how we've managed such an extremely volatile part of our cost base, and it's a 3-year rolling program. And it gives us what we desire, which is, as I say, a certainty and a smoothness to our results. But nothing really to add on that. Hedge levels, you're right, it's about 80%. We haven't changed that. And in terms of our derivative position, which we've talked about in the past, you know, we're very comfortable with that. That's now closer to the money rather than significantly in the money, which it was before, which is no great surprise there. But it's all about risk management, and we've been very successful on that. So, very happy with that position. Thank you.
Thank you. We will take the next question from line James Simon from Prescient. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much for the call. I did miss some of the call. Did you mention what the like-for-like volume decline was in Q3? And secondly, the sharp fall in paper prices that we've seen, is that continuing in March? And at the end of the day, what is the impact on you of that, given that you are a net buyer of paper?
Thank you. We haven't given the guidance for Q3 other than to... We haven't said Q3 was other than to say that we did see a destocking over a particular period over Christmas and the New Year, and some sort of the general industry commentary that's been out there. I mean, we're not over that short period. We're sort of broadly consistent with that. In terms of paper prices, you're right, they've fallen. As you know, we buy paper, a lot of paper, so the price falls, we just obviously pay less for that paper, and then the indices change for our customers, we obviously pass that through. Pricing has been falling. We'll wait to see what happens in March, but I wouldn't be surprised if March was a bit lower than February. But we'll have to wait and see. I think when you look at the reduction in price of paper, reduction in energy, reduction in starch, reduction in OCC, you know, you can see the lower input costs, you know, really obviously partly mitigating that, the lower price of paper. But thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We will take the next question from line Justin Jordan from Davy. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I've got two quick questions, gentlemen. You've talked about, I think it was bumpy, was the phrase you used, box demand in December and January. I'm just wondering if you can give us a little bit more color geographically between, let's say, Southern Europe, Northern Europe, and the US, and clearly any more color you can give us beyond January 2023. And secondly, just on sort of the boring technical thing, FX. You had a modest FX tailwind in the first 6 months. Am I right in thinking that should be slightly bigger in the second 6 months, given the weakness we've seen of sterling versus both the euro and US dollar in recent weeks and months? Thank you.
Again, if I take the first, Major, and you come on the FX. So look, in terms of the volumes, I mean, it's very difficult sort of getting into, you know, almost sort of weekly basis, but we did see really. It actually wasn't even really before Christmas. It was actually some of the our customers that their factories stayed closed for longer into January. This is where the effect was. So if normally in January they'd have opened on the 5th or something like that, they'd have moved to the 7th. Well, you've missed 2 days, and 2 days on 20 days in the month is obviously 10%, just in terms of a in terms of that volume. In terms of regionally, you know, Northern Europe, because the UK and Germany, where I think, you know, there are some other issues there. You know, Germany in the export markets and the manufacturing, the UK, because, you know, the UK economy is in a particularly challenged place with all the reasons that we know about. You could say Eastern Europe was a little bit stronger. Southern Europe was therefore a little bit stronger. During that period. But I said earlier, I mean, I'm always very cautious to start even, you know, talking about individual months, but, you know, maybe did start better. But I think we are going to just continue to see some volatility, but it will recover. That's what our customers are telling us. It makes absolute sense. And we're seeing it in the final consumption by the consumer. When we look at all of this sort of the Kantar data, et cetera, there we can see the resilience in those sectors. But Adrian, on FX?
Yeah. So, Justin, you're absolutely right. FX is a continuing tailwind for us in the second half. So there will be a slight improvement on actual when you take the translation into account. Absolutely. Thanks.
Thank you. We will take the last question from line Brian Morgan from Morgan Stanley. The line is open now. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks, guys. Just two questions from my side. And just follow up on the energy question. You've guided previously about £100 million higher energy cost in FY23. Do you have a similar number or a guidance for FY24? That's the first one. The second one, could you just give us a little bit of commentary around OCC, where you see in the market, and particularly interested in if you think that current prices is high enough to incentivize collectors to continue collecting?
Adrian, do you want to take
I'll do the first one. So on energy, no, we're not giving any guidance for next year yet. It all depends where we see all of our production and what our consumption is going to be. But at this stage, I would just go with what I said earlier, that I'm not anticipating significant changes year on year because of the smoothing effect of our hedging. Thank you.
And look, and on OCC, with the reduction in the production of paper in across Europe and the lower volumes, then we've seen the OCC stocks on an industry basis obviously increase. So if 8 months ago they were sort of 8 days, something like that, then they've gone up to more like, you know, 11 or 12 days, and that has had an effect on price. Pricing's actually been reasonably stable for the last few months. Interestingly, we have seen more interest in some of the export markets that particularly affect places, you know, places like Italy and the UK. We've seen the export market a little bit stronger. That's sort of supported the price. But at the moment, it's relatively stable, which is obviously
you know, typically less than half of where it was back in last summer. But look, I'd just like to say to everybody, I think that's our last question. Thank you very much for your time. We are overall very pleased with our progress. Trading remains very much in line with our expectations, with strong profit growth and strong improvements in our overall financial metrics. Thank you very much for your time. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now disconnect.